Welcome home, everyone. Thank you for joining in on this episode of Welcome Home with the Katinas. Welcome Home is a podcast where I, your host Josh, sit down for a conversation with different people who I admire and discuss whatever's on their mind, and especially focus on life at home in times like this. Wherever you are and however you're listening, thank you for your support, and once again, welcome home. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining in on this week's episode of Welcome Home with the Katinas. Happy April. I guess it's mid-April now that you're listening to this. But today, as we're recording it, it's April 9th, which is a special day in my house. It is my wife Alexis's birthday. So
happy birthday, Alexis.
Happy birthday.
Before I get started, I have to say happy birthday, Alexis. I want you to know I'm thinking of you today. You'll hear this in a couple weeks probably, but I love you and happy birthday. I want to start off also by thanking everyone who supports the show by listening, by watching, to our financial partners with Katina Ministries. The show wouldn't be possible if it weren't for people like you. So thank you so much for all of your support, your generosity. And if you're listening or watching and you want to know more about Katina Ministries, learn what it means to be a partner with us, the best way to do that is to visit thekatinas.com, and you'll find all the information you need to know there on our website. So thanks in advance for doing that. Today, we have a special first-time guest. It's been... Well, I'll say this. I don't typically give introductions for our guests. I let them introduce themselves. But I did feel like for today's guest, I wanted to share a little bit about who he is. He is a Nashville legend, the first professional athlete we've had here on Welcome Home with the Katinas.
Let's go.
Three-time NFL Pro Bowler, 2019 first-team All-Pro punter from the Tennessee Titans, Mr. Brett Kern.
Yes.
What an intro. I'm glad you intro, because I wouldn't intro myself.
So. No, man. When my dad told me, yeah, Brett's going to be on the podcast, I was like, oh, I should do a little bit of research. I knew who you were, obviously. But I went on, I just searched your name on Spotify, and I saw a couple podcasts that you've done in the past. And so I was listening through. I was like, oh, I need to make sure I give this guy a good intro. So,
you did great. I appreciate
it. Thank you, man. I appreciate you being here. And to start off, I'd like to ask you if you could just tell us what your connection is with the Katina family. I know it's with all of my uncles and my dad, but if you could share that, that'd be awesome.
Absolutely. I mean, well, I appreciate y'all having me on here. This is a no-brainer for me just because of what y'all have done coming into our facility and or at the hotel and just sharing your music, sharing your heart. And so when you texted me, gave me a call like, hey, do you want to come on the podcast? It was, I'm here. So it's just been probably my favorite chapel service was when the Katinas would come to sing, to share. And it's been... Man, I remember the first time, 2010, I believe, maybe 2011. And I was like, man, the Katinas. I was like, all right, these brothers are coming in. Okay, this is, I could do this. And then you guys just started singing and playing. Man, it was like straight butter.
Oh, man, thank you.
And so every year coming in, I talked to the chaplain. You know, we've gone through a couple through the years that I was there. And I was like, man, when are the Katinas coming? Book them. Let's go. And I just remember telling guys, you know, inviting guys that normally wouldn't come to chapel, like, hey, you got to come. Like, you got to come. You got to check these guys out. You got to hear what they have to say, their story. And so it's just been a blessing for me, and it was probably one of my favorite times of the year whenever y'all would come through, especially around Christmas time, because you get a little Christmas, action in there too, which was always great.
That's awesome.
Thanks, Brett. Well, I'm proud, as my son Josh said, thanks for having, for being here. And I remember all those years. You know, we started doing Titans Chapels before you got there, when Mitch was there early on, and then he left, and then he came back. But, you know, I remember, I mean, when we first started doing it, I was obviously a lot younger, a little bit older than the players, right? And I was always really nervous, like, what are we going to say to these guys? What are we going to sing? Well, then we just got older, and some of these younger guys could be our sons. And I'm like, man, let's just go and tell them that Jesus loves them. And I remember the first time I met you, I thought, oh, Brett. And I always, when we're around professional athletes, I have a respect. You know, like me and my brothers, if we weren't musicians, we wish, like many other people, we could be professional athletes, right? But there was something about you that I guess I had the nerve to ask you for your number, and we exchanged numbers. And then throughout the year, even though we wouldn't see each other, we'd occasionally text each other. And then I remember it was probably 3 or 4 years ago when we sang the anthem.
Yeah.
And whoever coordinates the anthem called us and said, hey, part of it is, can you wear the team jerseys, like official team jerseys, and then just tell us what numbers? And I was like, oh, I know what jersey I'm getting, my man Brett's. So,
hey, well, at least three of your other brothers didn't do six as well, and you had 666 up there.
Exactly.
That would have been, it wouldn't have been good.
So it's just an honor to have you on here, and man, I'm excited to just get to dive into what's been going on in your life. So,
you guys met at through Titans Chapel.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten to go with my dad a few times to Titans Chapels when they're there. And I know that, well, I don't know. I've always been a big NFL football fan, obviously. I'm not necessarily a Titans fan. Titans are my second favorite team.
That's okay. Who's your first?
Pittsburgh.
Okay. As long as it's not the Chiefs,
we can have
a conversation.
No, we don't do that.
Okay, all right, good.
No, I cheer for the Titans every time they play, except for once every 4 years when they play the Steelers. But what I was going to say, though, is that when I'm at the Titans Chapel, and usually it's on Saturday, right? Saturday mm-hmm. night?
Saturday so night.
Saturday night.
The game's in 24 hours. I often wonder, like, what is it that the players and coaches who are there, what are they looking for? What are they there for? Is it a ritual for some people? Are they actually, mm-hmm. I guess what I'm wondering is, what are people expecting for a chapel service like that? Is there a, for you, what is your reason for going to chapel when you go?
Yeah, I think for a lot of guys, it's different. You know, the best part about an NFL locker room is you get, you know, 53 guys plus your practice squad, and all of them have a different story.
Sure.
All of them have a different upbringing. You know, their grandma raised them to, you know, my case, I had two loving parents that raised me. And, you know, I remember one teammate was homeless, mm-hmm. living out of a car. It's just everybody's different, right? Yeah. And so everybody had a different reason for going. Some, it was ritual. You know, it was their chance to, you know, get in God's word for the week and maybe check a box. You know, for me, I felt like I was a spiritual leader on that team. Mm-hmm. You know, Tim Shaw kind of set that bar, right? And then when things happened to Tim, I remember him telling me, like, hey, buddy, this is yours. Like, this is your team to lead. And so I took that personally. My faith grew exponentially with that, because, you know, guys would come to me and start asking me questions, and I felt like I wasn't really prepared for a lot of those questions because my relationship at that time wasn't really that deep, and so that forced me to go deeper in my relationship with him. And so, you know, for me, I loved going to chapel because we always, for the most part, had somebody come in and speak, and just to kind of hear what their heart was. I was appreciated when y'all came in because, A, you brought your family. And I remember growing up, my dad, you know, did FCA back in Buffalo, New York, where I grew up, and he was able to do some chapel services for the visiting team, you know, that would play the Bills. And I remember going, and I remember specifically, you know, they played the Colts, and it was Jim Harbaugh was the quarterback. I think Marvin Harrison was, like, in his first or second year. And just to see that was just like, man, this is awesome. And just that experience of being around it, and the guys that would come up to you and were, hey, man, love, appreciate you here, all that kind of stuff. So I just love that your family was able to come and experience it. But I also think, too, like, y'all, like, Joe, when you spoke, you you spoke in a way that was, I wanted to learn more about God, right? I didn't necessarily want to learn, you know, there's some guys would come in and they would preach and they would kind of focus it on how we needed to get better or what does the Bible teach about me, right? And I'm, that kind of bothered me a little bit because really I wanted to know, I already know my flaws. I have flaws. I have sin. Like that's my human nature, right? But I wanted to know more about God, right? What does the Bible say about who our loving, caring God is that he would send his son like to die on the cross for us, right? And I always appreciated when you came and spoke is that that's where you spoke from. Like this is what I'm going to teach you about our loving Father, right? And so I was always curious just to see guys that would come in. Those ex-coaches would come. You know, former players would come sometimes. Local pastors would come just to hear, you know, the word of the Lord. And I also felt like, you know, for me, it wasn't a ritual. It wasn't like, hey, if I come to chapel, you know, I'm going to all of a sudden have a great game tomorrow. Because trust me, I had plenty of bad games and I went to chapel. So, you know, but I think the guys, you know, a lot of guys looked up to me. And I felt like it was important for me to be there, you know, for my own faith, but also for other guys, just because you never knew what kind of conversations were going to come from chapel, right? It might not be that night or after the game or anything like that, but Monday in the hot tub, you're all hanging in there, everybody's sore, and you never know what kind of question would pop up, and so it was, like I said, I was just always looking forward to when you came because I knew what was coming. I knew that you were going to talk from, you know, the standpoint of, you know, this is our God and this is who he is and let's learn something about him.
Dad, when you kind of touched on this earlier, but when you get the call to come do Titans Chapel or any kind of environment like that, what's your goal at those kinds of functions?
I appreciate it, Brett, just what you said, because I remember early on, you know, it's hard not to perform, you know, when you do what we do. Like, okay, what songs are they going to like? What should we say? I think what helped is that me and the uncles never played sports. Like, so we realized, okay, we don't have to anything to tell them about their profession. We can't say, hey, you should do this, or this is how we can't relate to that. But we are all humans. We all have a sinful nature, and we all need a savior. So let's talk about that. That was our commonality. And not any different from anywhere else we go to, but I think with professional athletes, what I think is, if you're good at what you do, that opens their hearts, you know, and you don't come trying to prove yourself or tell them like, hey, this is who we are. You just, like the Bible says, your gift will make room for you. And so I think, of course, every year we did, I think we've been doing chapel for 20 years now, maybe if not longer. But, like I said, the more you do something, the more you realize, and even in my own journey, like, I'm sure probably some of the things I said early on because of life and because of my own mistakes and flaws and sin nature, this year I probably said something different and because of my hope and experience. But that's the beautiful thing about what we do. It's just we're not up there preaching something. We just are preaching what we live. And sometimes where we're at is not a good place. And I remember talking, I would say most the powerful chapels is when I was myself and said, man, I'm struggling. I remember when 2 years ago when I was going through anxiety from some stuff. And I didn't go into detail about it, but I talked about anxiety and my need for God, my need for peace. And I remember that, you know, like guys came up to me and said, dude, thanks for sharing about that.
I mean, anxiety that's real in professional anything. Especially when you're on a stage, you're on a field. You know, the last year or two when I played, I mean, I had to go see somebody because I was like, I had all this stuff that was just built up over playing, stuff that I just kept aside. And, you know, I made 3 Pro Bowls in a row, right? I mean, it was unbelievable to be able to take my kids down to Disney and, you know, get a free ride down there and experience all that. But with that came this expectation and the judgment at practice. I mean, every time you're out on the field, you're getting evaluated, you're getting judged. And then especially on Sundays, now it's in front of, you know, whoever's in the stadium and on TV, right? Yeah. And so the anxiety of that, of having to perform. And I think, you know, I remember you talking about that, and it's just like, you just had to take a deep breath, right? Mm-hmm. Your worth is not in your performance. And so I remember that chapel, and because I think you and I were probably going through a lot of the same things at the time without knowing it, but just to hear your words on anxiety, because, you know, living up to expectations was really, really hard to navigate and to try to deal with.
I think that even when you said I had to go see somebody, I remember I had to see somebody, and that was hard for me, you know, coming from my faith background where I don't know if I was taught this, but I just assumed that, well, I got Jesus, so Jesus over everything. Jesus fixes everything. That's the way I interpreted my theology. Then I got to this anxiety, and I was praying, and God did tell me, and I won't go into the deep, God said, dude, yes, but your situation, you need to tell somebody the truth about what you're struggling with. Tell one person. I couldn't. I was like, well, I could. I didn't have the humility or the courage to do that. And so along the way, and still I'm walking on this journey of recovery of God healing me one day at a time, I had to go see somebody. And to say that in public, saying that now is not as much of a challenge as it was 2 years ago. Like, right. Oh, you mean you can't just pray it away? Well, not me. I tried to pray it. I tried to read it. I tried to fast it away. And yes, do I believe that God heals? Absolutely. And sometimes he heals through other people. And that was a big step for me. So I think somebody listening, maybe, I don't know, maybe you have the same faith background as me and you're struggling with some anxiety and I don't know what, maybe you're battling addiction. Pray, breathe. I had to learn how to breathe, just to sleep. And also you might need some help. You might need to go see somebody.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, being able to tell somebody instead of keeping it bottled in and locked up was huge for me. But then also, you know, I mean, I was in the Word every day reading scriptures on anxiety, peace, and, you know, all the things that are there, right? I'd go to the back of the Bible and see the word peace and, all right, there's 10 verses. I'm going to read all these and I'll be good, right? But it wasn't that. And I think there's something too about, you know, the person that I met with was a believer, right? Strong Christian. And to have somebody speak the word over you to where I'm not reading it, my eyes are closed, and he's just speaking the word of God over me was huge for me. That was something that, you know, you tell somebody, which was hard enough,
yeah,
right? But then for him to do that was huge.
It's beautiful.
Brett, so you are professional athlete, NFL punter, but you're also a father and a husband. And I've always been curious about this. What's it like navigating the pressures of being in the NFL, being an elite athlete, and then also having a navigating family life? What is that like?
You know, I think we were talking about before we went on here, just, you know, I didn't really realize how much my wife did to make my job easier. And I tell her this, you know, I told her this throughout my playing career. I was like, if I was not with you, I would not be in the NFL. Mm-hmm. She's like, you know, kind of rolls her eyes, but you're, you know, you got the talent. I'm like, no, you don't understand how much the game is mental. Mm-hmm. And her encouragement and her support throughout, you know, all the years of playing, you know, 15 years was huge. And so I think the biggest thing for me was trying not to bring football home, because there is a lot of stress. There's a lot of pressure. You know, and like I said, I bottled a lot of that up. And to bring that home and necessarily take it out on your wife and your kids is not healthy. So there'd be days where I would you know, Nashville traffic. And, you know, sometimes you get frustrated with it. And other times it was like, okay, I'm going to throw on some worship music. I'm going to decompress a little bit so that when I get home, I'm there for my wife and my kids. It was hard. You know, we had kids younger. You know, we had our first after my rookie year. Right, I was 23. My wife was 22.
Wow.
And so he was able to experience. I mean, my son's been to over 100 football games. Right. That's all my kids. It's all my kids knew was, yeah, you know, dad playing football. And so I missed a lot. Missed a lot of games. Saturday flag football games, softball, soccer. Missed a lot. Mm-hmm. And so that was pretty hard to take. And now that I'm done, you know, I'm coaching. You know, nice. I coached 15 second grade girls in basketball this winter. So that was fun. But like, as hard as that was, I didn't care because I was coaching my daughter. And same thing with our middle daughter, just being able to be there for her, for her soccer games, basketball games. My son's in eighth grade. He's playing JV soccer right now. And, you know, he's playing goalie, which is what I played until I made the switch over to football. But to be there for him, they just had a tournament this past weekend in Gatlinburg with his school and drove over there, made that drive to Gatlinburg, which was adventurous.
Nice.
But, you know, to be there for him as he's learning this position that he's never played before, just to be there to encourage him, love on him, whereas, you know, yeah, I think the Titans reported, you know, April 8th yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have been able to go.
Yeah.
So more afternoon, you know, lunch dates with my wife that we've never had. More time together, being able to travel a little bit more. Because really, I mean, your Thanksgiving, you practice on Thanksgiving, yeah. Christmas. I mean, I remember, you know, sometimes when you'd come around Christmas and everybody's getting ready for Christmas and it's like, well, we travel on Christmas because we play the day after, or you know, you might play on Christmas, you might play on Christmas Eve. You know, I remember one time we were at Jacksonville and I had a drug test after the game to try to avoid having a drug test on Christmas. And well, of course, Jacksonville is 80 degrees and I was drinking like crazy, but that didn't matter. Still a little dehydrated and I couldn't complete the test after the game. And I came home and, you know, there's the drug tester that is in charge of the whole Middle Tennessee area, you know, Christmas Eve at 10 o'clock
at
night.
At your house.
10 o'clock at night at my house. Wow. My kids are like, why is there a guy? I was like, kids, I'll be in the bathroom. Just don't bother us. That's so, wow. You know, it's but to have kind of your holidays back and to start really for us to start traditions in our house for the first time on holidays has been pretty special.
Do the kids, do they like being coached by dad? Are they receptive of it?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I try to come at them. You know, for me, like encouragement really helped me, mm-hmm. You know, when I was playing sports. And so I don't think a lot of people like to be degraded in sports, to constantly be yelled at. There's a time and place for that. But I always feel like if you're going to give that kind of criticism, hopefully you can, you know, follow that up with encouragement. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I just try to encourage them, if I do critique them, which I do, you know, I try to come at it in a loving way and not in a tone that's like, why didn't you pass it to this person? They were wide open. What do you, you know, where's your vision at? What are you doing? Right. Just say, hey, next time so-and-so is open, you know? And so I think for the most part, they like it. My daughters, love it. My son's probably 50-50, but I do know, you know, showing up at that tournament and for him to look over and just smile to see me there meant, man, almost brought tears to my eyes. So
I'm sure.
It's beautiful.
I asked that question because, like my dad said, so I grew up with a dad who did not play sports, but I played sports growing up. And I have this memory of when I was finally, like, I guess, big enough to start playing pickup basketball with the grown men. I'm playing with my dad. I was probably, what, maybe 13 or 14 at that point. And I remember my dad's coaching me while we're playing pickup basketball. And after I told my dad, Dad, you didn't play basketball growing up. I don't want to hear anything. I don't want to be coached by my dad.
Do not tell me what to do.
But I feel like it would have been – if my dad was an athlete, it would have been different. Maybe not. I don't know. I felt like for me as a kid, like the thing I wanted from my dad in anything, but in sports was kind of what you were saying. I just wanted him to be present and to be, I wanted to know my dad was proud of me.
Present and approval.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't need him to tell me what I'm doing right. Going the
post.
Wrong.
Hey, what's up with that low post move, man? What's up with that?
Yeah. I have this memory too of, remember dad, I was playing baseball. Yeah. It was, how old would I have been when we went for the first time? And I remember showing up and all the dads are like, oh, throwing dude, the ball.
For travel ball? Like,
yeah, it was on a travel ball.
Yeah, you would have been 5 or 6.
I have this memory. So
Before you say that, so I didn't grow up, well, we wanted to play sports. Our dad didn't let us, right?
Oh, I remember you telling us that. Yeah.
But one thing I never wanted to play baseball. I was scared. Still today, when we go play catch, or I'm scared of the ball. Like I'm
you got
scared.
That. You got like that Sandlot.
Yes.
You
know, yes.
The son of the stepdad around the back and plucks him right. Yeah.
So Josh starts playing, and the coach comes and says, "Hey, can your son play travel ball on my team?" Of course, that to me, never playing sports, that's like my son just made the NFL. Yes, absolutely. So we show up to
6 years old.
So we show up to 6 years old. We showed up to the practice. Go ahead.
I just remember we showed up to this practice, and it's a travel ball. I'm excited, and all the kids that I'm going to be playing with, they're on the field, warming up, throwing with their dads, and I realize I don't know if my dad can throw a baseball.
Really?
He didn't have a glove.
Like everybody else has gear, you know? And I show up probably with my flip-flops and bringing my son. I'm like, oh, me and Josh are going to have to play catch.
I think.
Do you remember what I told you?
Uh-uh.
You don't remember this. What? I said, Josh, don't throw the tar too hard to me.
Because you didn't have a glove.
He's 5 or 6.
He's catching baseballs barehanded.
Kids are out there warming up their rotator cuff, massaging their Tommy Johns. Oh, yeah.
Man. All right, so the sports geek in me wants to ask you, you said you switched from soccer to punter.
Yeah.
How old were you and why?
Yeah, so I grew up soccer. My dad played pro soccer for a little bit. He shattered his kneecap when he was 26, never played again. So he played goalie, and I wanted to follow in his footsteps. My uncle's from Haiti, played soccer. Cousins played pro ball a little bit. And so soccer just kind of runs in our family blood. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, grew up young age playing soccer. And then I got into the travel world, you know, to the point where it was like an hour drive to practice, and you'd have practice an hour back, and, you know, you're traveling, you know, for tournaments, and I loved it, honestly, because my goal was to play to be a goalie over in Europe, right? Mm-hmm. Playing the Premier League, Bundesliga, you know, you name it. Just wanted to play at the highest level. And so growing up, you know, the community I grew up in, you know, you got like the club, it's not club. I don't know. It's like, you know, like the we're all the kids from the same town, you know, they all sign up and then mm-hmm. they split up teams and all that kind of stuff. And so our, you know, when I was in ninth grade, at this point in ninth grade, I was playing, you know, travel wise, I was playing against kids that were getting plucked to go over to Europe,
wow.
right, and play for Barcelona's their school that they have over there, right? Wow. You get the kid in the system, and they start, you know, working mm-hmm. their way up, and you know, next thing you know, maybe they're good enough to play on the top stage in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. So kids were starting to kind of get plucked to go over to Europe at, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old,
wow.
right?
Wow.
And so I was kind of at that level, but, you know, at that time, like, oh, I want to play for my school, right? So ninth grade, I tried out for varsity, and the head coach at the time, his son was a junior, and one of his best friends was the goalie, who was also a junior. And so I tried out for varsity, and at that time when I was in ninth grade, I was able to punt a soccer ball from the top of the 18 to the other top of the 18.
Wow.
So I could let it fly, right? And so the coach was like, hey, you know what? We're going to, you know, you're only a freshman. You're going to play JV this year. So, you know, this is kind of where you're going to be. And I'm thinking, oh, man, this is – and it was it was boring.
Yeah.
You know, our team was pretty good. We had a lot of athletes. And in New York, you can only play one sport a season. So football and soccer were the same. It wasn't like I could, you know, go play football. We played on Saturdays, actually.
Okay.
We didn't play Friday nights. You know, I couldn't go kick on Saturdays for football and then play soccer throughout the week. Hmm. You just couldn't do that. So it was one or the other. And so I played JV that year, endured it. You know, just talked to my parents, like, this is your freshman, you know. So, you know, next year, you know, you'll be in 10th grade, feel like you'll be good enough to beat them out. And so 10th grade rolled around, same thing happened. Mm-hmm. Hey, you're going to play JV. And I told the coach right then and there, I quit. Mm-hmm. I just had enough. I was done. Not with soccer per se, like I still love the game, but I was just done with that. And the football coach, varsity football coach, he was my gym teacher, PE teacher. So since like 7th or 8th grade, he'd been trying to me to like, hey man, like I seen you kick a football in PE class. Why don't you come play football? I'm like, oh, you know, I don't do that, right? I don't want to get hit. That's not my thing, right? So I quit. Came back. My mom hadn't left yet, and opened up the van, and she's like, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "I quit." She goes, "Oh boy, we get in the car. Let's go home and talk to your father, and let's see how this goes." So, I had the conversation with my dad, and he was like, "Okay, you know, for him being a goalie and kind of seeing the politics behind it, I think he was really in full support of it." And knowing that soccer, you know, they don't really hand out full rides for college. And at that point, you know, growing up in ministry, it's, you know, I'm not going to be able to go to Syracuse and, you know, pay $40,000 a year for school. So my goal was to try to get a scholarship so that, you know, the burden wasn't on my parents to, you know, take out loans and have to pay for school. So, you know, I went and, told the football coach that I quit, and he was shocked, and so he's like, all right, well, let's get you fitted. And so I went in, had no idea how to put on shoulder pads, you know, no idea, like, thigh pads, there's a butt pad. I'm like, do I really have to wear this? And he's like, yeah man, if you want to play, you got to wear all these pads. And, you know, I had to put in a mouthpiece, you're trying not to gag, right? First time wearing a mouthpiece like that. So yeah, 10th grade I played, I don't know, four or five games on JV, and then shot up to varsity, and you know, really took off. And when I realized probably the end of that year, sophomore year, so going to my junior year, my dad took me to the Penn State football camp. And there was 450 kids. And from all over, because really up there, up northeast, it's not like down here, the SEC, where there's just, it's football, football, football. Up there, it's like Syracuse, you know, Penn State. Yeah. Like, those are kind of like your heavy hitters up there. Yeah. So tons of kids were up there, and I won the camp, and the special teams coach for Penn State came up to my dad afterward and was like, look, like, keep doing this with your son, 'cause he's got a lot of potential to go pretty far. And so that was a huge catalyst for me of like, okay, I think I can, if I keep working at this and grinding, like, I think I can make this work, or at least see if I could go play, you know, college. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up, you know, getting a scholarship at the University of Toledo to punt there for 4 years, and then got a crack in at the NFL.
Wow.
That's amazing.
The thing about that story that stands out to me is the conversation you had, that your mom made you have with your dad.
Yeah.
When you said that,
yeah,
mom, I quit. Okay, let's talk to your dad.
Yeah.
That sounds kind of familiar to me.
Yeah. It was, I want to say I was dreading it, but I was also like, you know, my parents had invested a lot in soccer, a lot of travel, a lot of gas mileage, a lot of time out of their schedule to come to tournaments on the weekend, you know, missing church on Sundays for soccer. You know, it was a lot. And so I felt that, like, almost that weight of, man, I just wonder how this is going to go. Yeah. And he, you know, with open arms was like, all right, I'm going to support you. I don't know really anything about punting or kicking, but if you want to go kick at the school, I'll go chase all your footballs, and I'll help you out. And he did.
I think there's a powerful lesson in that. And, you know, I don't know what all the I don't know what you were expecting for your dad to say, but to think about how different reactions that he could have had, how his choice to, okay, I'm just going to support my son, what that led to for you in your life. And I think that there are moments in our lives that maybe at the time we don't realize that we're at a crossroads or at a fork in the road. But when you look back at it in hindsight, you're able to see, wow, that it could have gone a different direction than it did. My whole life could have been different. I think about moments in my life like that, where things could have been, my life could be totally different if just a few things went a different way. And sometimes for the better, often for the worse. And I'm thankful for, I have to credit it to God's provision for my life. And I don't know, I don't know your dad, but I give credit to your dad for supporting his son.
It's crazy because even, you know, through the whole process of, you know, and when I was trying to get a scholarship, there's no social media. Mm-hmm. I couldn't make a highlight tape and put it on TikTok or Twitter. Sure. It's, right. I couldn't do that. So they had to, you know, hire a recruiting service who, you know, put together a highlight video on a CD and sent it to the service, and they blitzed it out, you know, over email to every college coach in America. Right. And so even thinking about, you know, I was really close to going to Michigan, you know, almost went to Missouri. Like, there were some big schools that I thought I could play at. But then I ended up at Toledo, and I was like, oh man, I feel like I'm, you know, Power Five conference level, whatever, worthy. But then, you know, I'm at Toledo, and that's where I met my wife, right? At an intramural softball game, right? And I just think about, you know, if I don't go to Toledo, I never would have met, you know, the most important person to me in the world, right? So it's just a way of God's provision, even though a lot of times we have no idea why is it going like this? This isn't how I envisioned it, but it's just kind of like, hey, you pump the brakes, you know, trust in me, you know, have faith that what I'm doing is the best for you. Mm-hmm. And
it's beautiful. I think even the beautiful part of that story is that there's always opportunity. Like, I think I feel like I hear sometimes working with young people, not just, but even in my generation, like, yeah, what happened? You were so good at football. What happened? And I think there's a lot of times where I hear the story, well, my coach, man, he ruined me. He stole my dream. And I don't want to discount that maybe that has been true for some people. And I just feel like there's always another way. Like, you could have said, I mean, soccer.
Yeah,
my uncles, my dad, this was my family's path.
Right.
And then you just said, no, I quit. But you didn't, that wasn't it. I'm not done with sports. I'm done with soccer here at the school. But how else can I get a college scholarship? And again, I just think it's powerful to say, to remind people, and including myself, that if it doesn't work out here, it can work out here. There's always a way, I believe. God always provides. And now, it takes a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
It's not like, I'm sure there was new sacrifices for football. You literally, a pun intended, you had to be willing to get hit.
Well, like, so about that, so my, you know, when I went over to football, my coach was like, hey, because I was this size, you know, as a freshman. I was 6'3", a lot skinnier. He's like, man, you got a good pair of hands. Like, I want you to play wide receiver. And I'm thinking, all right, that sounds pretty cool. I think I could, yeah, why not? And one of my really good friends was a linebacker. He was probably 6'2", 220 at the time. And first or second practice, I ran a little slant route, and he de-cleated me and knocked the wind out of me so bad. And he, you know, he's standing over me laughing. And I got up, I went back to the huddle, and I was like, hey, if you want me to keep playing football,
I can't do that.
I can't do this, and just let me go work on my craft over on this other field. And he was like, the other field is yours. Go ahead. So
all right, I got a question about that. In college and pros, in all your career, you played 15 years in pros, right?
Yeah.
For 4 years in college.
Yeah.
Over 20 years with high school. How many times did you get hit?
I remember. I mean, not a lot, but I remember them. Oh, wow. I remember them. I mean, the worst one was that fake field goal in 2019 against Tampa. And I ran right at Devin White.
Oh.
You know, who runs a 4.45.
Yeah. Linebacker.
I mean, jeez. I had whiplash. I wasn't able to really punt a football until the following Sunday.
Oh, my goodness.
Went to the chiropractor every day. Was getting, like, massage treatments on it. I mean, it just. And then I'm thinking, man, people, they do this every down.
Derrick
like,
Henry.
Like, huh? Derrick Henry is, yeah. You know, 6'4 and, you know, 240, and he's sticking people.
Yeah.
Right? And I got hit once, and I'm like, done.
How many tackles did you have to make?
Well, how many tackles did I have to make or did I make?
Sure. How many tackles
my
did
philosophy,
you make?
My philosophy was the speed bump, okay. Right? Yeah. Like if you're going 40 miles an hour and you hit that speed bump, well, now you're only going 20. So I provided my speed bump services. You know, the best one was probably, my best speed bump was probably Devin Hester.
Oh, wow.
You know, I grabbed his jersey for a tenth of a second. He kind of, I don't think he ran over me, but, you know, it slowed him down enough for somebody to tackle him. And, yeah, you know, now he's going to have a gold jacket. So
yep, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's a question I have. So when someone houses a punt,
it's a terrible feeling.
How much of that is the punter's fault?
I've had bad punts that were, I think I've had 3 return to the house.
Uh-huh.
One of them I distinctly remember at Houston. I just hit this awful punt, duck hook right down the middle, right to a guy that runs a 4.2. He just had no chance. Okay. I had another one my rookie year where I was told to go the direction, and he told the punt team to go a different direction. Wow. And a part of me thinks that was to try to get me cut.
Oh, wow.
And so that was, they all went left. I put it right where I hit the ball and I was like, that is perfect. Mm-hmm. And I look and I see the punt team. I'm like, whoa, where are y'all going? Right.
Panic.
And you know, I got to the sidelines and the special teams coach was like, I told him to punt left. And I was like, you told me to punt right. Wow. Like, you know, so that was a very, in rookie year too, you know, really, I mean, you're on a week-to-week basis for the most part. You know, obviously, as I got, you know, throughout my career and got, you know, certain contracts, like, you kind of have a little bit more stability for the most part. It might be more on a year-to-year basis rather than game-to-game. You know, those first rookie year, second year, third year, I mean, you're game-to-game, right? Because nothing's guaranteed in your contract.
Wow.
You know, they could let you go and, you know, that's it, right? So, you know, that was really, really hard. You know, after my rookie year, there's probably 3 or 4 times where I was sitting in my car crying, like, I want to quit. I can't do this. This is too much. But you know, I'm not a quitter. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew that this is what I wanted to do and I knew I had the talent to do it and that God put me here for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I needed to grind. You know, the Lord is with us, you know, on the mountaintops and in the valleys, right? And I was in a valley big time, but I knew that I just needed to grind and push it out. And then there was another time that, you know, I hit a good punt, and it was Darren Sproles, right? I mean, if they were just to have, like, if you go to Canton and you got the Hall of Fame, I always thought that you should go down the hallway past the lavatory bathroom areas, and then there should be your little special teams wing, right, of just special teamers. And I feel like Darren Sproles, you know, would be in there, and he's called a Mighty Mouse. You know, he was 5'6", 180 pounds, 90 pounds, and solid as a rock. And he just Scooby-snacked a couple guys, and I wasn't going to catch him. So, that's just one where you're like, I mean, you know, there's some returners out there that are just, I mean, they get paid too. Unbelievable athletes that can make guys miss in a phone booth. And, you know, my job was to try to put it in a position to where they couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, when you have, I think I hit 1,000 punts and, you know, at some point, you know, some of them are going to get returned.
Sure. What's a worse feeling, having it returned or having it blocked?
Well, both stink. Because when it's blocked, it goes against your stats.
I didn't know that.
So you, in essence, lose a yard of net. So they have gross, which is, you know, from where I, from the line of scrimmage to where the guy catches it. That's pretty much a gross stat is solely on the punter, right? Then your net is what the returner gets after the return's done, right? So like I said, if you gross 150, he returns at 10, your net's 40. And that could be based on the punt. That could be based on your coverage. There's a lot of factors that go into your net. The punter, you know, I could go out there in a game and put every ball out of bounds, and there's no return. So I could go out there, average 50, grow, or net 50, okay, right? I've had games where I went out, average 50, and I've only netted 30, right? Because the returner was so good. Uh-huh. But when you get it blocked, it by the end of the year, it takes about a yard off of your net, which is tough. When you're talking about Pro Bowl and stats and like contracts and all that kind of stuff, like net is a huge factor going into that.
So are you pretty aware during your career, were you pretty aware of your stats?
So I'm glad you asked that, because my first 10 years, I was a stat nerd. Okay. I was like, okay, you know, Dustin Colquitt, he's in Kansas City. He's averaging 48. If I want to get to the Pro Bowl, I got to be ahead of him. And, you know, my net, I got to make sure. So I'd go into games putting so much more pressure on myself to like, all right, I have to try to average this. I have to try to net this. But really when you go out there, like if the ball's on the 40 going in and all they're asking you to do is hit a 30 yard punt just so that the defense, so you have field position, I can't control that. Right. Sure. And so my 10th year, that's the first year that I was not going to look at stats. And that was the first year I actually decided to read the Bible all the way through. Like, for me, it was a moment of, okay, Lord, I'm done with the pressure of looking at these stats. I'm done with it. Like, I'm going to dive into your word. I'm going to, you know, take my relationship to a new level and let you control, be the author of it. And so that year was probably one of the best statistical years maybe in NFL history. I mean, there's some guys that, you know, the kids coming out of college now, I don't know what kind of meat and potatoes they're eating, but it is just, it's crazy. And so, you know, that year was, I remember when with three games left in the season is when you do your Pro Bowl voting.
Okay.
And it was the first time I looked at stats and I was like, I was speechless.
You hadn't looked at your numbers at all.
Hadn't looked. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, wow. I knew I was having a good year, but I didn't realize I was like 2 yards ahead of everybody in gross, like 3 yards ahead of everybody in net. And it was just, and my special teams coach came up to me. He's like, man, you're having an unbelievable season. Mm. And he's like, I know you haven't been looking at stats, but I have. And you are, he's like, I just want to tell you congrats on your first Pro Bowl. And I was like,
wow.
And man, I was just like, I had to leave. We were in Arizona. We were out there for the whole week because we played Arizona, and then we were playing San Francisco. So we stayed out there. And I just remember, you know, in our little meeting room in the conference center there, and I just had to leave. And I went back to my room and just started bawling because I was just overwhelmed with just gratitude of like, man, Lord, look what you do when you just surrender.
Yeah.
Just surrender it, right?
Yeah.
I might tell that story in a sermon.
That's a great story. I think
surrender, bro. Yeah. Surrender the stats.
Oh, it's so hard. But, you know, and then the next year I did the same thing and, you know, made another one and then did the same thing. I made another one. And I was like, I just, you know, I'm done with trying to control. You know, you can only really control what you can control.
Sure.
Right. If they need it, I just wanted to be the guy that went out there. If they wanted me to hit this certain punt or put it in this certain spot, like, that's what I'm going to go do. And at the end of the season, you know, let the chips fall where they fall. And, that was a huge turning point for me in my career.
Wow. So making the Pro Bowl, obviously, that was a goal and dream of yours that you accomplished 3 times. And this will be the last question I ask you. It's a question I ask a lot of our guests who come on the show. And I'm curious to ask you, now as you're in a relatively new season of your life, what is it that you're dreaming about now?
That's a great question. I've just been so on a football grind mentally. You know, I'll admit this, that like, you know, at one point I was the best in the world at something. Mm-hmm. And now that that's gone, what's next? I don't know. And that's been like, you know, before you got like, that's been really hard to know that that's where you were at. And now that you're never going to experience that, that feeling again, has been difficult. It's been hard to deal with. You know, I talked to my wife about it and, you know, some other people that I'm really close with that, that just know what I've gone through over 15 years of playing. But I look at it like, you know, the Lord has something for me. I don't know what it is yet, but I do know that right now I'm enjoying the time of being with my family. I almost feel like I'm trying to make up for lost time with my wife and sporting events and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm really just trying to I just feel like the Lord's telling me to just, hey, just decompress, enjoy this time of rest. Because, I mean, really, in our culture, rest is not a word that is liked, right? You want everything now. There's no patience. Everything's about me and what's best for me and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, that's definitely been a transition for me that's been difficult. So I'm just honestly just taking the time to decompress and see what's next. I don't want to rush into anything just because I feel like I need to.
Yeah.
And so I'm just really taking time right now to enjoy time with family.
Yeah. Dude, I'm proud of you. Thanks for answering that. Honestly. I wanted to ask you the same thing. How's this transition going? Cause I do believe the journey of life, you know, being a Pro Bowler, being an NFL athlete, so many accomplishments, where your story of soccer didn't work out, and then all of this, the grind. And from the outside, we look, and when I hear about Brett Kern, what comes to my mind is, oh, that's my friend who is the best punter in the NFL. But then I don't live in your shoes where, yeah, but that's not me today. That's something I accomplished. And I think if humans, and especially men, if we're honest with ourselves, well, let me say for me, it's always about accomplishing, succeeding, winning. And then when that season of my life, the rest part is hard for me.
Yeah.
Because I have to look at myself of, okay, what am I outside of that? The Pro Bowler, the All Pro. And is that enough? And I love the answer, I don't know. Yeah. I think I'm learning, and now I'm 54. I tell my sons this, if I can tell a young dad a couple things that I would encourage him to say often or feel first and then say that I didn't when I was a younger dad, I would tell my sons this more often. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
Yeah.
So
That is excellent fatherly advice.
Well, thank you. And it came through a lot of pain and a lot of mistakes. And I'm on my journey. But, dude, I respect you for I'm learning sometimes that some days the best, most truthful answer is I don't know.
I don't know. And I think it's, you know, for the first time, you know, waking up and looking in the mirror and it's like, who am I? Right? Because I was a football player, right? I had some accomplishments, played a while. That's great. But for the first time, I've had to think of, really, like, who am I? Right? Football is, your schedule's laid out for you. This is when you work out. This is when you eat. This is what you eat. This is when we practice. Your schedule for a day is laid out in front of you for 10 months out of the year, right? And now that that's gone, it's like, wait, well, you know, who am I, right? And now that football's done, it's the same thing. Like, you know, talking to artists, it's like when you're not on the stage anymore and you're not entertaining, you're not, you know, providing something, then it's just, well, that's not me anymore. So who am I?
It's a good question. The journey to be on, I won't say his name, but I have a cousin. If I said his name, everybody would know. But just out of respect to him, he was the best, one of the best linebackers of all time. one of my favorite guys to be around. And when his career was over, I don't think he was comfortable, could accept that he didn't know. He felt like he had to have the answer because he was the man. He was the face. Everybody looked to him to have the answer. And he's not here anymore. You know, and I just wonder if being able to have some peace in knowing that I don't know is okay. It's a place for me to be at right now. And not to sound cliche-ish, but, and to say, I don't know what the future holds. And I know who holds the future.
Yeah, I think guys that are done when football is their identity, like for me, like I have a relationship with Jesus, right? And it's still difficult.
Yes. Yes.
And I think guys that don't have that, I mean, you could see why, you know, the divorce rate is almost 80% 2 years after guys are done in the league, right? You know, suicide rate is higher than it definitely needs to be, right? Because guys, are you just, I mean, I've had days where I've literally sat on the couch and I've just sat there. And you just ponder things. You just think about things and you're like, what am I? What am I, you know, last year I was in a Super Bowl, right? And now I'm sitting on a couch with like nothing to do. And like, do I go to Costco? Right? Are the strawberries on sale? Like, you know, and you're just sitting there and you're just, man, you just contemplate a lot. And so that's, like I said, man, it's been tough. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's okay. Perspective of, man, the Lord blessed me with 15 years, a lot of opportunities, met a lot of great people, right? Got to experience a lot of things and chalk it up. And what have I learned from it? And how can I use that for what's next?
Brett, powerful message, man. I think I'm blessed to hear you say, I don't know. 'Cause I think that, everyone goes through that more times than once in their life, seasons where we don't know. And, you know, I'm encouraged, hearing from you that, you know, it's hard, but that your relationship with Christ, if you don't know anything, you know that you have that. So I really appreciate you sharing that with us. I appreciate you taking the time to be here, man. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you also have to be okay with telling people I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like I've told people I don't know, and some people are like, man, that's cool. Like, you'll know. And then other people, there's this judgment, almost this shame that comes across that's like, wait, what do you mean you don't know? Yeah. Like, oh, wait, so you're not doing anything? Psh, man, you got the life. Like, no, I get it. Like, I understand. But, you know, there's – and I have to be okay and understanding how to handle those comments that come, right? Just to say, I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, man. I'm encouraged.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you
so much. If only I knew how to play the drums, I maybe have a, have a job with the Katinas or something.
No, you don't want that. I'd rather go to Costco and buy some strawberries.
Oh, hey, man. I've learned. All right, so you go to Costco. Monday, you can't go to Costco and get fruit because the weekend wipes them out, and they don't get their shipment until this is what you do, right?
This is what you learn,
this is what
man.
You do. And the guy told me, he's like, hey, if you want the freshest produce, go to Costco on a Tuesday,
okay.
Tuesday morning, because we unload the carts Tuesday morning before we open. Now I just gave all this information.
Now
Tuesday is going to be slammed at Costco. It's already slammed enough.
If you want to see an all-pro punter at Costco, go
Tuesday
on Tuesdays.
Morning, that's
and trust me,
find
I've
it.
Got I've been in the grocery store or done like running some errands and stuff like that. And like sometimes I'll have like I had a guy come up to me in Costco like 2 weeks ago. He's like, oh, Brett Kern, and I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, huge fan, man. I'm like, what are you doing in Costco? I'm like, bro, we need toilet paper. Like, we need strawberries.
We need strawberries, too. Right?
I mean, you know, my kids want snacks for school.
I love fans. Love fans.
Like, oh, cool. Well, pleasure to meet you. And then he's, like, looking at my cart. I'm like, man, don't judge my cart. Back off.
That's funny. Well, dude, you're welcome back on the show anytime.
Hey, this went too quick. I don't know what your time limit is, but I just appreciate y'all having me out here just to share, you know, my heart.
And, thank you, bro.
I just appreciate y'all, what you do. And I'm going to have to ask Mitch when... coming back.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll let me back in the building. I don't know if my passcode still works.
We'll come and do something for you.
Yeah.
Hopefully my passcode still works, but
Well, thanks again, man.
I appreciate
it. To those of you listening, thank you for tuning in. We'll be back with more episodes soon. Have a great day.